Welcome to a brand new edition of Problematic Women. I'm Virginia Allen.
And I'm Kristen Eichhammer.
And back in studio with us is our good friend from the Heritage Foundation, Emma Waters. Emma, thanks for being here. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
I feel like this week is really my time to shine.
It is
no
your time.
Totally a pun intended. Because for those of you who maybe were living under a rock, and actually I totally saw a story from someone that goes to my gym that didn't realize an eclipse was happening.
Oh,
truly.
My word. They were like, so funny.
They were like, why is it so dark? What is it going to rain? And I was like, why are you admitting that on social media? But for those of you who maybe, you know, joined that group, no judgment here, there was a total solar eclipse. And I mean, Virginia, I saw you on the roof of Heritage.
Yeah, Monday.
You went out and saw it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun. And it was a big moment for someone into space. And that is
like
because...
yourself.
Oh, yeah. Say less. And that is because this was actually a total solar eclipse. So in 2017, we had an eclipse and it was, I believe, a partial. But the difference between 2017 and this year is the moon was actually slightly closer to the Earth. Hmm. And what that did is it really allowed for that eclipse to reach more people. It also had to do with just kind of like the pathway of the moon this time. It went over a lot more major cities. So we saw it going up from Texas all the way up to Ohio and Indiana. And those were where the total eclipse pathways were. But I mean, if you think about it, when you have a shadow, when you move your hand closer to whatever object the sun, between that object and your hand, it's going to be a bigger shadow. So that's essentially what happened here with the moon, which is why it was so cool to see. Some of the more interesting side of things, the scientific side of why the 2024 eclipse kind of outshone the 2017 eclipse is because we really got a chance to see the sun's atmosphere, and we actually had a lot more tools this time in space. So when I was at NASA, the Parker Solar Probe was probably the most insane project to be launched because it's objective was to go and study the corona of the sun. And corona is not the coronavirus here. It is these hot space or hot gaseous areas of the sun that pretty much have formed as a result of the magnetic field. And so this time, if you looked up into space, and honestly, if you go Google it right now and you look at a picture of that total eclipse, you'll see maybe some pink outlines. And that is basically this magnetic field that it's kind of like a hairball for the sun. And it's just kind of just how the sun interacts. And we don't know that much about the sun, which is why we have the Parker Solar Probe and the Solar Orbiter, which are responsible for studying these coronas and just magnetic fields within the sun's atmosphere. It's insane. There's a lot of science here. But I think if you were to whittle it down, 2024 eclipse was so important because we had the instruments in space to study those corona, and we could compare that to what our observations were on the ground here. And we had some really clear, awesome insights. New Mexico got some really cool imagery. Ohio, it was a little cloudy, but my brother sent me the coolest photo of the total eclipse. And I mean, everyone kind of just took photos. But thank you for letting me nerd out. I hope someone learned something.
Okay, I feel like we have to go back. You were at NASA?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. No, during the Trump administration, Project 2025 plug. Yeah, you can get a job there.
That's incredible. I had no idea.
That's why I have a NASA logo
Kristen
on my...
Kristen is a scientist, actually.
Yeah. Actually, I did major in bio, so I can kind of say that.
You can say you're a scientist. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's legit. You've had the job
engineer,
to prove it.
Not an engineer, but...
It doesn't matter. You're still a scientist.
Who needs to be an engineer when you can go work at NASA doing whatever?
That's so awesome.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kristen, for helping us understand. I still don't totally understand, but I understand maybe a little 1 degree better about what exactly went down on Monday.
Basically, the part you saw was the magnetic field atmosphere of the sun. And that's pretty cool. That's why it was
you can't look
at it unless it's a partial or unless it's a total eclipse. You didn't ask. It's all good. We can keep going.
No. I'm interested. That's hilarious. All right. Well, go ahead. Let us know what we have queued up on today's show besides the eclipse.
There's nothing else to talk about, really. But up on today's Problematic Women, we discuss former porn star Nala Rey's journey out of the industry and the public response to her interview with Michael Knowles. And the Vatican has clarified its position on surrogacy and LGBTQ operations Is their stance surprising? We explain. Plus, Miami laid down the law on spring breakers, and it worked. We share the results. And as always, we'll be crowning our Problematic Women of the Week.
Each week on Problematic Women, we sort through the news to find those stories that are of particular interest to conservative-leaning or problematic women, those whose views and opinions are often excluded by those on the so-called feminist left.
If you are a problematic woman or just someone who supports strong, independent women, please consider supporting us by leaving a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and encouraging others to subscribe. Really does make a difference.
All right, let's get to it. The Daily Wire's Michael Knowles, host of The Michael Knowles Show, told a really redemptive story on his show on Saturday, I believe is when it published. I think they did the interview last Wednesday, but it published on Saturday. And this is getting a ton of attention. So Knowles sat down for a 2-hour and 20-minute interview with a woman named Nala Ray on his show. If you have not heard of Nala, she used to be essentially a porn star. She made $9 million on the pornography streaming site OnlyFans. And then she met Jesus. She has a wild story. And if I listened to the full interview, and really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought, first off, Michael Knowles was just a master of asking great questions and carrying on a great conversation. So that was super fascinating. But then her story is just in and of itself so interesting. And she talks about growing up in the church, in a Christian home, but a lot of dysfunction within that, and her parents getting divorced and then remarried and church splits, and just how that affected her as a child. And then, you know, her really feeling as a kid, her desire for love, the way that she received love, that just wasn't being met, and wanting independence, craving independence, and stumbling upon OnlyFans as this option to make money and be successful, and how she was really, really good at essentially marketing herself. I mean, she's someone that when you hear her talk and you hear how she approached OnlyFans, you're like, oh, you could totally be a CEO of a company and crush it. But it's like, whatever you put your energy towards, you know, the talent is there. And for years of her life, she chose to put her talents into pornography. And she made $9 million doing it. And then she was connected through TikTok with a man who is a believer, who is a Christian, who really started encouraging her in her faith and challenging her. And ultimately, when she was alone in her home, she had an encounter with the Lord and met God, and he changed her life. And it really is, you know, I think you hear it and it's, I don't totally understand what happened. But if you've had that encounter with the Lord before, if you've met Jesus and you've seen his transformation power, it's, oh yeah, this makes sense, because it's actually, it doesn't follow logic. So wait a second, I was one way and now I've met Jesus. He touched my life. He called my name and now everything has changed. And this is the story that she shares on the podcast. When she recorded it, she had gotten married 3 days prior. Michael Knowles, I think, was pretty giddy to be the first news outlet that was announcing this and had the breaking news that Nala Ray is now married. So she married the man that she had connected with on TikTok, who is a Christian influencer. They've started a platform in order to help people that want to get off of platforms like OnlyFans and have another outlet, that are influential, that are good at producing content, but want to produce content that is not exploiting their bodies or other people. So wild journey. But the reaction has been interesting to watch. And people have actually been really critical. Not everyone, but many people on social media, good old social media, have been really critical of Nala Ray. And they've questioned her sincerity, if her conversion is real. And Michael Knowles asked her about this. And I love this exchange. Take a listen.
But does it bother you? So you're not smacking, which is good. But does it bother you when they say you're a big fake? This whole thing is just about getting attention. You realized, you know, it was coming to an end, and you don't, and now you want to get married, and it's all so convenient. You're a big fake. Does it bother you?
It makes me giggle, actually, because again, I know what the Bible says about, you know, those who judge, and I have been set free, not by them, but by Christ. Christ set me free. Like Jesus of Nazareth. Yeah, you know, that's the God I believe in, you know. I have been set free from that. So I can understand why people think that you know, I was either at my wit's end or whatever it may be. Yes, I was, for sure. But I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. And you should be looking at the fruit of the Spirit. What is the fruit that I'm producing right now? Is it bitter dying? Or is the fruit that I'm producing sweet? And is it growing in the soil that I have in right now?
Right.
You know?
Okay, so I just love her response there. The whole interview is, even though it is 2 hours and 20 minutes, it really is worth listening to, I think. And there's lots of clips, too, if you just want to kind of get a sense of it. There's lots of clips online. But I was fascinated and want to talk about many of the things that she brought up. But first, I want to talk about the response, because I think that is really fascinating to see how society in general, especially those who call themselves Christians, have responded to Nala Rae and her sharing her story, and specifically her sharing her conversion story. What strikes you all about that, about essentially what Michael Knowles asked her about, people saying, hey, they're calling you a fake? What's your take after listening to the interview?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people, a lot of Christians, particularly those who are terminally online, as most in the Twitter world are, that are very wary of celebrating these celebrity conversions too soon. We've had, obviously, a lot of examples, particularly of performers and those in the creative space who do have this incredible encounter with the Lord, share their conversion story, and then after a couple of months sort of fall back into their previous life. And so I think people are just very maybe jaded or just hesitant to not celebrate something and put their name to something before they've really seen the fruit of it. But that's even what Nala is saying, right? That, like, you can't judge her based simply on her words, but on the fruit of her life. And frankly, everything that I heard in the interview, everything that we've seen from her life is just incredible. Like, you're seeing someone who, like, truly has turned away from a life of sin, embraced Christ, embraced the church, embraced a godly marriage, and by all accounts seems to be truly living the life that she is talking about and celebrating. So I think that's probably where a lot of the hesitation comes from a lot of people, but she seems very genuine.
Yeah. Well, that was what came to my mind, Emma, is I was thinking back to Kanye West and his conversion, and everyone was so excited and all about Kanye, and let's listen to Kanye Sunday service and, like, all this stuff. So, well, actually, let's kind of wait and see, and let's celebrate the fact that this conversion has happened, but maybe let's, like, push the brakes a little bit. And I would say the same for anybody that, you know, is a baby Christian. Like, absolutely, let's celebrate. It is so not our place to judge, and the Bible's insanely clear about that. Like, do not judge lest you be judged in the same manner. And so that's not our role. At the same time, it's okay, yeah, maybe don't get all of your theology from Nala Rae right now.
Yeah, as a theological leader, but she's not positioning herself as
exactly.
a theological leader.
She's
I would
just
be very concerned. Yeah,
yeah.
If she was doing that, I would be more concerned.
Yeah.
So it will be so important to have incredible discipleship in her life right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
And it sounds like her husband is providing that. And I assume they're part of a really good church that teaches the Bible.
Yeah, it sounds like she talked repeatedly about her mother-in-law being a woman of faith.
Oh,
like,
that's huge.
That is huge.
Yeah.
You have good older individuals who've walked the walk, talked the talk. That is huge.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that one of the things she said in the interview was, pray for me. It's like, how humble is that to ask for prayer? And for any of us, we need to be in a position where we're saying, hey, please pray that I grow in my faith. But the fact that, like, she recognizes I'm still growing, and I also have this powerful story to share, so I'm going to share it.
Yeah.
But also, I'm still growing.
That was one of the things that I really appreciated about her story, too. So she grew up in a Baptist evangelical home. She was a pastor's daughter. And I wasn't a pastor's daughter, but I was homeschooled all the way through, like she was, and was really involved in the church. And so I could sympathize with a lot of the stories that she told, because it's not this way in all Protestant denominations, but particularly Baptist. You really are the first family of the church, and having friends who were pastor's kids and seeing the pressure that they were under.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there's a lot of hurt and pain from that part of her life. But I appreciated that she never bashed her parents.
Mm-hmm.
She never bashed the church. She never spoke badly about her denomination. And I feel like, sort of on, like, the Protestant sub-Twitter, there's been, like, a lot of stories lately of people who were like, I grew up in evangelical and here's why it was horrible and I deconstructed my faith.
Yep.
I grew up at Catholic school and here's why it's horrible and I deconstructed my faith. But what she presented was, I think, just such a, you could just see the redemption of the Lord in her life. And, like, clearly she suffered a lot, but she's not reacting to the suffering, but is really, yeah, just like honoring her parents. Yeah. And wasn't even speaking poorly about her upbringing and is now like living back into that in a way that I think is like very wholesome and good.
Yeah. I think that also is what stuck with me, partially because that's as far as I got in the interview. It was so good. But yeah, when I started listening to her story, I'm just like childhood trauma. Like that button in my head was going off. And it kind of made sense, the journey she's taken. And there have been a lot of people, and I've gotten a lot more comfortable with my faith. Heritage is such a wonderful place to be for that. And mm-hmm. there's debate and there's conversations. And I've learned so much through that, through small groups, through all those things. But what I found so impressive is she came from a community. And she came from a background that was kind of, you know, maybe not the perfect fit, and then moved into something that was definitely not the perfect fit. And with very little support, obviously, she had the love interest and some people around her. But I just thought that was such a testament to God's will mm-hmm. and how powerful he is. And mm-hmm. that, I think, is what my biggest takeaway from this story is, mm-hmm. is that God is in control. I have to remind myself that all the time. I had to remind myself that in 2020 after the election. I have to remind myself now we're 208 days away from the election. I just had to write something on that. And I think that this was such a beautiful reminder that like you can be in this place so far from God and he will draw near to you mm-hmm. and he will bring you closer to him if you let him. So to your point, I think this was, I honestly am not, I have no judgment. I have no yeah. idea. Like the people that are criticizing her, no idea what that gossip looks like. But what I do see is what she is doing right now. And I hope that continues.
Why do you think there is criticism? Why not just celebrate the fact that someone who has lost has been found and now has hope and life and is willing to speak out and share their story and warn other women, hey, this path leads to death and destruction. Don't follow it. Why can't people just celebrate this?
I mean, this is like this is the quintessential older brother phenomenon, right? So this was called Michael and the Prodigal Daughter, speaking of like the prodigal son in the Bible who takes all of his father's wealth, leaves, squanders it with a horrible lifestyle and comes back. And it's the older brother who can't extend that forgiveness because he's done, quote unquote, all the right things his life. And now he sees someone who's wasted everything, lived a promiscuous life, coming into faith. And I think there's a few things. There's one, the pride of we've been faithful Christians. Why is this person now all of a sudden receiving all the same benefits that I have, even though I've been the one who's been disciplined and suffered in their mind? That we're all sinners right before Christ. And then second is I think there's a lot of envy. She is incredibly good at what she does. Mm-hmm. And something that our priest used to say is that most people aren't that virtuous. They just don't have the opportunity to sin. I don't have $9 million in my bank account. Like, she is a level of like intelligence and attractiveness and frankly just had enough money that she really could do anything and frankly with almost anyone. And I think there's probably some envy there of this person who is now the top of her world, has all of a sudden come to Christ and is now in some ways a cultural figure in the Christian right. And so why does she get this attention? Why does she get this focus when, again, she's the one who has this horrible sinful life? Mm. So I think it's probably a mix of those two things coming together. But yeah, it's, again, really unfortunate, right? Because Christ's redeeming love is something that goes so far and is so radical and is so just so scandalous even. It makes me think of the Redeeming Love book by Francine Rivers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys read this.
Yes,
it's big
book.
In the Protestant world. Okay, you have to read it. But it's this woman who was a prostitute, right, who like comes to Christ. And it's sort of a fictional story of the biblical account. Yeah. And we see this over and over again where Christians in the Bible, even like this nation of Israel in the Old Testament, constantly falls away, commits adultery to Christ, and is brought back and redeemed. And I think, yeah, I just think the longer you're in your faith, the easier it can be to say, well, I'm so unlike that person because I have been walking with the Lord for so long, and forget that we really are all broken sinners before the Lord, and that her redemption story is our redemption story. And ultimately, it is Christ alone who justifies us if you were in faith, and that's it, right? Yeah, so I think those are the things that come with it, but we should be celebrating
to
it.
To your point, too, I mean, even as you were explaining that whole story of, you know, she's making all this money, I'm like, well, that's convenient. Cool, you made all this money. No, I can empathize.
It's the flesh that rises.
Totally,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think also, in the same tune, you have to, that is the challenge, right? And comparison is the thief of joy. I learned that a long time ago. When you compare your journey to someone else's, you're going to be upset, but that doesn't mean that your journey or what you're going to receive gift-wise from God is any less valuable. And that is what you need to focus on. So I totally get it. 2.5 hours of her talking about, you know, I had all this money, but she even starts that interview with, I have $9 million and my parents, you know, they were rejecting me. And honestly, if I were in her shoes, I am so blessed. You just explained some of the other backgrounds, you know, with like pastor kids and Catholic schools. While you were saying that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am so blessed that my parents put me in school. I had a mom and dad that loved me unconditionally, supported everything I wanted to do. I am so blessed. There's no value I could, that's worth way more than $9 million. And my sister listens to this every week. I know she feels the same way. You know, like we were so lucky. And, again, comparing that, yeah, sure, $9 million right now looks great, but having a childhood that was full of innocence, love, and, you know, God, I am so lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing she talked about is how she never could feel. Like, she didn't have any emotional experience, and how it got worse the longer that she did OnlyFans. I think of how sin ultimately numbs us and dampens us and kills our ability to be fully human, to fully engage with other people. And that was really striking. But the other thing that I had a lot of sympathy for, having a lot of friends who were very creative, is it's so hard, I think, as a Christian to find like you have a truly excellent outlet if you are creative and drawn to creativity. Yeah. Because there's constantly like the quote unquote Christian creativity that always feels like a bad knockoff of like pop culture five years ago. And so I can imagine like how difficult that is. But that's something at the very beginning of the interview that was so striking to me, is she talked about the thing that drew her to lewd pictures and pornography was her love for the human body. Mm-hmm. She talked about loving her anatomy classes growing up, wanting to be a dental hygienist because she loved teeth, which like seems so weird to me.
Yeah.
But she's, I love the human body. Like, I delight in the human body. And she was like, so the thing that actually drew me into this first was the desire to explore the beauty of it. And she talks about how obviously the approach she took was very perverted and actually corrupts your view of it, and how now she's like seeking to like honor the dignity of the human body with a far more modest and like appropriate approach. But it's just like a good reminder that oftentimes like the very sins that we walk into is not a desire to do evil, but it's actually just perverted and corrupted love. Like, she loved something, but it was the wrong kind of love. She expressed the love wrongly, and then that's what led her into these sins. It wasn't a desire to, like, I want to create, like, lewd pornographic content because I hate, like, Christianity. Like, that was not her motivation here. And so I think it'll be really, frankly, fascinating to see, like, how she continues to make art and celebrate the human body, the human person, doing so in a way that, like, honors its dignity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I'll end on this and say, if you're kind of questioning or wrestling, just go read the book of John.
Honestly,
the number of times that Jesus sits down with prostitutes, you know, the story of the woman caught in adultery, and you know, his response is, I do not condemn you, now go and sin no more. That's our model that we get to follow, and it is countercultural to the flesh completely. But that picture of forgiveness and celebrating the Lord's forgiveness is so beautiful. So I'm inspired by Nala Ray's story and encouraged. And I think we can all commit to pray for her in her journey, and that she's a voice to other women who are in the exact same place, struggling with the same things, but who might listen to someone who's been there and done that. So we'll leave a link in the show notes today if you want to listen to that full 2 hour and 20 minute interview that Michael Knowles did. But stay tuned, because up next, we're going to be talking about some news out of the Vatican. We don't usually talk about the Vatican, but they made a big splash recently, so we're going to be talking about that. But first, the Daily Signal is hiring. Specifically, we are hiring a congressional news reporter. If you or someone you know is already a congressional reporter, or maybe you're seeking to move into that career field, listen up. As the Daily Signal's congressional news reporter, you will have the opportunity to aggressively cover Capitol Hill, develop sources in congressional office, write breaking news, and deliver insightful reporting on legislative activities, policy debates, and political developments. This role offers a really unique opportunity to inform the public and shape the narrative surrounding issues that are impacting our nation every single day. And you'll get to work with one of the best teams in Washington, D.C. I might be a bit biased, but that is for sure my opinion. So if you are interested in applying, interested in being a part of the Daily Signal team right here, then check out today's show notes for the link to apply. You can also just DM the Problematic Women Instagram account, and I'll be sure to pass that link on to you. The Vatican has declared transgender surgery and surrogacy to be a grave violation of human dignity. That's according to reporting out of the Associated Press. For 5 years, the Vatican has been working on a 20-page declaration called Infinite Dignity. And this declaration states that it follows that any sex change intervention, as a rule, risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception. The document does clarify that there is a difference between surgeries to remove or add body parts to align with someone's so-called gender identity and surgeries that address genital abnormalities that exist from birth. And the document says that those genital abnormalities can be resolved through medical treatments, but is obviously something very different from quote-unquote sex change operations. Now, this is especially significant because Pope Francis has made it really a core part of his papacy to reach out to the LGBTQ community. He's made that a priority. But I think many Catholics and believers were just encouraged to see, okay, yes, the view of the Catholic Church, the view of the Vatican, they're not bending on this. They're still being clear. Is this, though, significant for more than just the Catholic Church? Obviously, Catholics follow very closely what the Vatican does. We have a good mix of Catholics and Protestants in the room here. What do you all think? Does this news impact society outside of just those who call themselves Catholic?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's so important to see the leader of the Catholic Church and the Vatican as a proxy of that provide such firm and unyielding guidance on this. It not only affects the billions of Catholics worldwide, but for those who are Protestants or of the Orthodox tradition, this is a fantastic reminder of what the Bible teaches, of what is good practice in these things. And I think also, like, the Pope is a cultural figure, right? Like, he's a cultural leader. And so what the Vatican says, what the Pope says, is not going to, hopefully, when all things work correctly, be something that's changed, right? This is now spoken and will be the practice and teaching of the church that will influence how politicians, how regular people think about these issues, even if they're not Catholic. So I think this is huge. And it also provides, I think, a really good reminder, challenge, example to the Protestant church that they too need to be very firm on this. And this is something where, because of the denominational structure and a few other factors, not all Protestant denominations have even come out with firm teaching and guidance on this, even if the day-to-day churches tend to uphold this. So I think this is a good challenge for Protestant churches to now say, okay, we need to also release this firm guidance and say, no, this is what we believe about the human person. This mm-hmm. is what the Bible says. And this is what we as a church believe and why you need to practice this too. And so that's something I'm very hopeful for, is that this is, yeah, just one of many religious declarations about the dignity of the human person.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of controversy, and I feel like I can say this because I'm Catholic, right? Like, I'm allowed to say that. There's been a lot of controversy around a ton of issues. We saw the whole Latin Mass pullback from the Vatican. We've seen this Pope's, you know, say that you can bless same-sex couples. We've seen a lot of things. And I was, you know, pretty upset after one of his remarks he gave. He insisted we abandon the rigidity of the past. And I think people forget, you know, like, a lot of people complain about gentrification and, you know, just like the modernization of things. And sure, modernization is great, but tradition is very important as well. I mean, the Pope's position goes all the way back to Peter, which is kind of insane. And so the integrity of that office and the integrity of that position should, you know, represent Catholic values and what people of the Catholic faith have been taught to believe by God and by Jesus Christ. We just celebrated Easter. And it has been challenging to wrestle with some of his perspectives and some of the things that he said, but this was definitely a win. I also agree. There have been a lot of Catholic churches even that have taken some liberties that I don't believe were the right things to do. Being in D.C., been to a lot of different Catholic churches. I have kind of hopped a little bit, but I did find one that I love, and I live near it, so that's cool. I'm following the rules. But I have been to a few that have taken some liberties and have taken some political stances even. And I'm just kind of like, I thought this was church, you know? And I think that's where things get dangerous when, to your point, Emma, people start to become more influencers than the roles that they were trusted to uphold and the traditions they were trusted to protect. So I am too very glad to see that he is, you know, actually following what we're teaching here.
Yeah. Well, I love the line that they have in this document that says treatments, whether it's to remove breasts or create body parts, that these so-called sex change interventions, that they risk threatening the unique dignity the person mm-hmm. has received from the moment of conception. And that, I think, is the crux of it, right? That when you tell a man or you tell a woman, actually, your body is incorrect, that is a direct threat to that person's dignity, to the foundation of who they are. And somehow people have bought into this lie that to support people mutilating their bodies, literally, it's love to support someone's insecurity. Mm-hmm. And it's love to support the lie that you are not enough as you were created. And so I love the line in the sand that the Catholic Church is drawing here. Let's be very, very clear. Every person in the way that they are created has unique dignity. And that doesn't need to be altered in some way through medicine or through surgery. That no. The way you are created is beautiful and has distinct dignity. Full stop there. That's powerful and
go
it's beautiful.
Go Papa Francesco.
Yeah.
Good job.
Like, at least you got this right.
No, and honestly, too, if you think about it, while you're saying that, I just couldn't get it out of my head. You know, we talk about natural disasters all the time. This is an unnatural disaster situation, you know? Like, the repercussions coming out of all of these gender mutilation surgeries, there's significant human toll there. So I feel like this is also just a win for humanity at
yeah,
the end of the
it
day.
It is. 100% is. I think it sets such a powerful standard and it removes the excuse, because the danger would have been if the Catholic Church had said, oh, yeah, this is fine, then everyone can point to, whether they're Catholic or not, oh, yeah, but the Catholic Church is fine with it. So, and that becomes this great excuse that people can use. No. Truth is still truth. This has not changed. Just because culture changes, truth doesn't change. So, speaking of truth, maybe that's a stretch.
I was going to say, where are we going with this one?
I don't know. I was going to try and build a bridge between truth and spring break, but,
Florida has bridges. DeSantis rebuilt one in 3 days.
Incredible. Our hero.
All right. Well, we're just going to roll into this next segment. So it is springtime. Flowers are blooming. It's beautiful outside. And of course, for so many individuals across, especially young people across the U.S., that means spring break time. Most spring breaks, I think, have already happened by now. So we're able to step back and take a look at Miami and what has gone on there over the course of the spring break season. Miami Beach, they came out a few months ago. They said, we are breaking up with spring break this year. And what they meant by that is, we're not doing the craziness again, because for multiple years, they've had shootings during spring break. Last year, things got very violent. There were mobs in the streets. There was increase of crime. And the mayor of the city said, okay, no more. We're implementing restrictions and rules for spring break to keep the order, to keep the peace, and let everyone have fun, but do it safely. So the new rules included things like beach entrances being closed at 6 p.m., liquor stores closing at 8 p.m., bag checks, DUI checkpoints around the city, and there was a really heavy police presence across the city as well during spring break. So the question is, did these new rules work? Did the restrictions work? Did people still have fun? And did chaos maintain a minimum? Was the craziness kept to a minimum, and were people kept safe? Well, the mayor says, yeah, that businesses have been happy and that residents in Miami have especially been happy. What have you guys seen from this situation? Are there any downsides to adding these restrictions?
I don't see any downsides. I think this is just incredible. One of the things that stood out to me in a video talking about spring break
was it wasn't only the residents of Florida who were so happy with it, but spring breakers. Mm. So one young man was talking about how there were multiple shootings last year and people died. And he said, this is the proper response. When you see shootings and spring break getting out of control, the normal, the reasonable response is to then put regulations in place to ensure that you're actually keeping people safe. Other women talked about how they just felt so safe and could really enjoy their time. And so the videos you saw of spring break this year versus spring break last year, just night and day of like rioting and people running through the streets and beaches overcrowded and drinking everywhere, to this year, you just see like young people playing volleyball on the beach with their friends and they're going swimming. And it really just struck me of this sort of 1950s idealism of like all of your friends together hanging out, not mediated by these rather harmful substances and harmful practices that really don't aid in true fun, right? Or like a truly meaningful experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this seemed like just an objective win if everyone's happy, which rarely happens. But something else too is Governor DeSantis talked about how their first priority is to protect the residents of the state. Mm-hmm. And how fitting that is that first and foremost, a country, a family, a state, a city has the responsibility to protect their own people first. And if you sacrifice the well-being of the people in your community to open the doors to other people to come and trash and wreck your land, that's not actually loving your own people. That's not protecting your own state. That's not proper or reasonable. And so I thought it was incredible that they were both able to protect their city and protect their residents, but also make it a place where others could like truly enjoy their time there. Yeah, it was incredible.
At my
border security.
What? As someone that has gone to Miami, I went to Miami, I think, twice. Totally different experiences. Once with a group, my soccer team, and once with just one of my friends. Kind of wish the 6 p.m. beach closing and some of those, you know, regulations and curfews, for lack of a better word, were implemented, because we had some late nights and, I mean, weren't doing anything crazy, but I just remember being so tired. And spring break is all about, you know, resting, kind of taking a moment before finals. And yeah, like, this sounds like a very nice, chill moment for a lot of students. And to your point, Emma, Miami is beautiful and it has a ton of things to do when the sun is out. So, mm-hmm. you know, in Chicago, at least, when the sun goes down, I remember a priest told us, like, that was when you didn't want to be in the area. When the sun was up and it was morning, it was safe. So same thing here. I think the ends justify the means. And I'm really glad to see that, because Miami's got an amazing, you know, infrastructure, an amazing restaurant situation, such good Cuban food. For anyone who is going to Miami soon, Pinecrest Bakery has the best pastelitos. They have such great culture there. So why ruin it with just reckless kids?
Well, I feel like there's two great takeaways. One is that this is a model that other cities can follow, that, okay, they've seen it. It works. People actually play by the rules when there's rules set out. And it is a benefit to locals, to businesses. Everybody wins. So other cities that struggle with, oh gosh, spring break is coming, brace yourself, this is a great model now that they can follow. And then two, I think it's a great reminder for young people of, oh yeah, things don't have to be insane for us to have a good time, right? Like, we can have fun and have that fun within the boundaries of law and order. And actually, we can maybe even have more fun and feel much, much safer when there are police officers around who are empowered to do their job and people are not drinking and driving. That actually removes pressure and makes the whole environment way more enjoyable. So thumbs up, Miami.
D.C. and Chicago, take note.
Take some notes.
Not that anyone's going to Chicago for spring break. It's kind of freezing,
yeah,
but...
Ooh. All right, well, stay tuned, because up next, we crown our problematic woman of the week.
Americans use firearms to defend themselves between 500,000 and 2 million times every year. But God forbid that my mother is ever faced with a scenario where she has to stop a threat to her life. But if she is, I hope politicians protected by professional armed security didn't strip her of the right to use the firearm she can handle most competently.
To watch the rest of Heritage expert Amy Swearer's testimony on assault weapons before the House Judiciary Committee, head to the Heritage Foundation YouTube channel. There you'll find talks, events, and documentaries backed with the reputation of the nation's most broadly supported public policy research institute. Start watching now at heritage.org/YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe and share.
Now, it is that time once again, my favorite time of the week, time to crown our problematic woman of the week. And the crown goes to
Harris Faulkner.
Atlanta born. That's not why I chose her, although definitely contributed. Harris is celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Fox News's Outnumbered. And this is kind of another nerd out moment, more political than science. But I watched Outnumbered. I had a TV in front of me in my first role here at Heritage. And I watched Outnumbered every day of the week. It was awesome. It is a great show. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's at the noon hour, and it's four female journalists and one lucky guy is what they call it. Just talking about the news of the day, Kara Frederick, our big tech director and just a boss, she has been on several times and is wonderful. But Harris has been there since the beginning. She's actually one of the, I want to call it like founding contributors or founding outnumbered hosts. And it's just incredible. A decade of the same show, longer at Fox, but a decade at the show. And really, you know, just a perfect example of what it means to lean in and still be a mom, still be a woman of faith, but really bring that integrity and love of work every day, not just on the TV screen, but in everything she does. She's got a really awesome social media platform. She had some really cool Eclipse coverage, but she's been an amazing journalist that has gone to the border, kind of like you, Virginia, has gone to the border.
Oh, I'm honored to be compared at all to her.
You will be. Daily Signal, man, we're making waves. She's written books about faith, and she's just covered so many news stories. I was thinking about this last night. How many elections has she covered,
oh,
you know?
Word.
She's just got all of this knowledge, but she continues to challenge the status quo each and every day with the hard questions that she asks, and I just wanted to make sure we highlighted a problematic woman such as her.
Yeah, she's very problematic. I really appreciate how poised and news-driven that she is. I think you watch some hosts on news outlets, and you always kind of feel like, oh, they're trying to get a guest to say this certain thing, or you know, they're just trying to go for a soundbite, and you really feel like Harris Faulkner's commitment is to journalistic integrity and to truth. And she's very thoughtful in the questions that she asks her guests and just very poised. And I'm always very impressed with her ability to carry on an interview and do it with such dignity. And I remember, Kristen, the first time I was sort of new in the world of news, and when it finally struck me, of like, oh, that's why they call it Outnumbered, because there's one man, yeah, like five women. Yeah. Oh, it's so clever. So it's a fun show in that aspect because it's just a unique idea. But then her professionalism really makes it so such a great source of news.
Definitely.
Yeah. I love it.
No, you don't wonderful. Have to add anything else.
You surprised me by looking over. I was just enjoying listening. And also, well, we'll just say it this way. She looks incredible.
Oh, I know. Oh, my goodness.
10 years, and she still looks, honestly, in some ways better than the day she started.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I totally against the red pill manosphere. I think women hit their glow up in their 30s.
Mm, agreed.
Like mid to late 30s is like the sweet spot,
yes.
And she is killing it.
She's
on the
killing
front.
It. Yeah. Go Harris Faulkner. All right. Well, with that, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Problematic Women.
Join us next Thursday morning for a brand new edition. And in the meantime, please subscribe and share.
As conservatives, we need your support in the podcast world. So if you would, take a minute, leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We're across all the platforms. It makes a huge difference.
For those of you guys wondering, and I know you are, the next solar eclipse will be 2045. And with that,
wow.
Yeah. I know, man.
That's, think about how old I'll
that's why you have to go out and look at the sun for 2 minutes or 4 minutes, depending on where you are.
If you miss it, gotta wait years.
Gotta wait
years.
A long time. But anywho, have a good week, guys.
Problematic Women is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation.
It is a product of the Daily Signal, produced by Lauren Evans and Virginia Allen. And be sure to follow Problematic Women on Instagram.
We produce Problematic Women in remembrance of our dear friend and former co-host, Bree Payton.